Welcome back to Researching Peace, the podcast brought to you by the Department of Peace and Conflict Research at Uppsala University. In the next three episodes, we're diving into a special theme that focuses on the connection between water, climate, and conflict. Join us as we engage in conversations with three unique guests across three insightful episodes. Here today is someone who is UNESCO Chair on International Water Cooperation and also the head of our department, Professor Ashok Swain. A warm welcome to Researching Peace. How are you today?
I'm fine, thank you.
Before we get started, I think our listeners would like to know a little bit more about you.
I was born and brought up in the southeastern part of India, a state called Odisha. My village was very close to Bay of Bengal. I did my school education in a village school, moved to the college education, small town in that province. But for my higher studies, master studies and PhD, I came to Delhi. I did my PhD from Jawaharlal Nehru University, New Delhi, 91. And then I came here as a visiting researcher, and I have been here more than 32 years now. Initially, I came for a very short time, but then I just ended up being here. Of course, I have done a number of small stints here and there, gone to various universities as a visiting professor, also gone to the other faculty to direct a center. But my career, my job has been in this department. It's the only place I have worked for 32 years.
That's a good compliment to the workplace. I mean, you're staying for so long.
Yes, we have a lot to proud of this department. This department has been probably the oldest and the largest department in the peace and conflict studies in the world. We celebrated our 50th year 2 years back. So its department started in 1971. And also you will not find in any other university in the world where nearly 100 people working under one roof on the issue of peace and conflict studies.
Tell us very briefly around water, what has been the areas you have done your research?
My doctoral research was mostly on the regular security issues like military, economic security of small countries. When I came here, I started doing research on water issues. Particularly in the beginning, I looked at how environmental resources can create conflicts. In 92, I started that and then developed a project together with Professor Peter Wallenstein, who is the founder of this department. Then my first research project was on the Ganges River, shared mainly between India and Bangladesh and Nepal and Bhutan, but mainly I was looking at India and Bangladesh first. The sharing conflict, which was taking place over a barrage, which India had built and divert the water from the Ganges, and also looking at how it has impacted Bangladesh and how a large number of Bangladeshis have been displaced or forced to move out of their houses because India is diverting the water. I mean, my research was how India is creating a trap for itself, because if you take away the water from Bangladesh, Bangladeshis will be displaced. They will move to India and there is a conflict taking place, India and the Bangladeshi migrants. That's the early 90s. Then I expanded into different areas. And then I moved to Nile River. I spent some time in the Nile Basin in the mid-90s, went to work on Nile and continue to work on Nile. So I look at how the international rivers can be shared in a new changes, which is taking place because of the climate change, and also the change in politics and the power of the different countries. Like, take for example, in Africa, when there was the international community or the international financial agencies like World Bank and others, they had a much larger say who will build dams, who will control the water before. But now China has been supporting at least 100 dams in Africa. So that has been a big change politics. So it's not only changing climate, it's a changing politics in many parts. So how that really creates different challenges. Not only challenges are not bad, because it also creates opportunities for these kind of new way of looking at the river management. Why I call it opportunities? Because traditionally, the big countries or the powerful countries in that river basin or in that region, they have controlled the most of the water. So now when there is a change, there will be a reassessment of who is getting what.
During your time as a researcher, conflicts caused by water and climate issues have increased. Am I right?
The thing is, there have been research or the kind of data you see that countries haven't fought war over water. But then I also say that, look, we don't fight wars over on one issue. Water might not be the immediate issue of fighting the war, but water plays a certain role in the conflict. There has been increasing number of civil conflicts which have been due to drought or the internal armed conflict which is taking place because there is a more drought or people are more natural disasters, flood and other things. But then also there have been a lot of urban conflict because many of the countries where urban water supply is not taking place the way it should. So you will see in the some of the seasons when there will be either demanding that the government should supply the water or the water price has become more or something of that nature. Conflicts are in different stages, are increasing. But the one thing is that the rivers, we saw a large number of rivers, a significant number of rivers, who signed the agreement in the 1990s. You name it like Mekong, talked about Ganges. Also, there was agreement on Jordan. It's part of the peace treaty. There are also agreements on the Nile, in the Zambezi. Those agreements, particularly the initial the rivers which I was talking about, it is about how much water the one party take. So it is more of this exploit the water or more develop the water. The agreements, many people confuse it's a peace. Or many people think that it's a cooperation, not in all the cases. Agreements are agreements. Agreements to lead to cooperation, to lead to peace, there are number of other factors are involved. And that is not usually taken in. What as a peace researcher, we are more interested how those agreements are good at making peace, making cooperation.
If they actually are working.
They work, how they bring countries together or right. the parties together, whether they interact with the only water issues or other issues. Like they can be, because if we start collaborating on water, then why not to collaborate on other conflicts? So those are our interest, I mean, the peace researchers' interest. But the people, those who are like coming from the like water research, water science, or the hydrology, or you call it the environmental economics, or geography. So then they are much more into the, they focus more on agreement. And they think once agreement is done, the things are done. I mean, and there is a confusion that's why it has come that water leads to peace because the countries have signed the agreement, where we have a challenge to show that whether it has led to peace or not. These agreements have been signed in the 90s, but we don't see many of these agreements taking place now. This is a new power game because in the 90s, it was a more of a order which was only one superpower left. The money was coming from the World Bank, so that was easy to address these things. But now there are many other actors that have been in the worldwide, so it has become confusing. And the climate change has also bring a lot of uncertainty that how this water situation will be in the future. So the countries do not want to really predict, or they cannot predict what will be the water situation in the future. So they don't want to make a long-term agreement or the legally binding agreement to really look at it, how they will really deal if the water issue becomes difficult in the future. So it's becoming more challenging now.
You were saying that the agreements were fewer now than there were before. Is agreements the key to getting water helping for peace building, or what could be the, looking into the future, what could be the key for peace building connected to water?
I think there are different stages. Who wants the agreement? The first thing. Okay. So if you are a country and I'm a country and we are having difficulties over water and we both agree that, look, we need an agreement, to sort this water out, then we approach people who can support us technologically and monetarily, because you need to create different water storage and water diversion issues, then you can do it. So it should come from the below. I mean, the countries themselves, if they really want the agreement.
Okay, so or it shouldn't be a third part coming in telling
them to do. Yeah. Mm. So if somebody is coming them and forcing, look, you take some money, build this, and then you do this, then it's usually becomes a bit more long term. It might happen, it might not happen, because there is no self willingness. Best possible thing will be when countries, they themselves realize, look, we can't really use or survive with our own way of using the water. We need to cooperate. So that is the first. If that comes and then external resources come in or the international community comes in, help it, it helps the process. Then there are two things which is important. Once you start doing the business over water or agreeing over the water, you realize that, look, you need to meet. You need to meet, you need to talk, you need to sign an agreement, or you need to agree, if not even formal agreement, informal agreement, how the water should be used. Then you realize we can trust each other. Trust is very important to build cooperation and peace. Okay, so the countries, if they start working on water, they can say, look, this is such an important issue, but we can work out. Despite its importance, despite its significance, if we agree on cooperating, we can really build, you know, these things. And then the trust comes in. Once you build the trust between yourself to work on a very issue like water, then it's easier to also find other areas to go for. So that's one. The second thing is, once you also think that you can sort out this kind of very extremely important water issue, with the help of negotiation, with the help of talking, and the violence or conflict and war is not the only option to get more water, then you don't really think about violence or conflict or to take these things to that logical end immediately in other issues. Your mindset will also change. So not only you build trust about with the other country while cooperation, your mindset about how to address a contentious issue will also change. So I think this is where part is that agreement doesn't itself lead to cooperation and peace unless it really leads to that what you agree on. If you just agree on that, I will take 50 liters of water and you take 50 liters, 50 cubic meters, 50 CBM waters, and I take 50, then it doesn't lead to anything. You just divide the water. But if we say that, we have other areas that how we can really do it, which time of the year, who will get it. If the water demand is more in your place and water demand is less in my place in these seasons, we can adjust. So if there is a time, place that we do have much more interaction than just a division of the water, then that will lead to the two things I mentioned. The trust and the ability to realize that the conflict and violence is not the only way out or should not be the first way out for on any contentious manner.
And what can research do to help?
There is a absolutely fantastic ideas that how you can manage water well, how you can create the cooperation over the rivers, what you can train to the negotiator. It's not that those things are not known. I mean, to be honest, there is very little improvement on that part has taken place in my 32 years of research. What I was talking in 32 years back on how to really develop the cooperation, it's a very minimal change has taken place. It's nothing drastic has changed. What is actually lacking, as I see it, is the political will. Research-wise, we are quite well off of finding solution, finding better way of managing the water. And it's not going to be, you see, it's usually people talk about blaming the population growth, blaming the, it's not always that. Because I recently wrote a piece that in South Asia, people say that because of the water scarcity, things will fall apart. But the South Asia has the average water availability the same as South Korea. And South Korea has become a developed country.
So blaming the water, you mean?
Yeah, you can't keep on blaming the water and say that, look, there is more population now, so we need to, you know. So because we are not using the water well. But who takes that decision? I mean, we have all the ideas, but it's a decision making will take place at the political level. Whether you will cooperate over the water, whether you will reuse the water, who will clean the water, how you will price the water. Everything is dependent on the political will of the leadership, political leadership. And the problem is, I think, is that our ideas, whatever scientifically we are or research-wise we have produced, we haven't really made it sellable to the political leadership. Political leadership doesn't see it as a benefit for them, because why they will implement it? Unless they find there is a political benefit comes out of them. They are also humans. They are also, they have interests. They are politicians. One of the most important thing has become for the researchers that how we can make this our findings, the way we see that water should be better managed, which will lead to the peace and cooperation, how to make it available to the political leaders so they understand and they think it's a politically beneficial for them to adopt that approach. And I think there we are missing quite a bit. And that has been also partly our researchers' flaw, because many of this research, when you do this modeling, when you do this kind of theory making, they leave politics and political science out on the water resource because they think it's too much complex, too much complicated to bring them in to understand how to make them, you know, because the things will change if a particular letter will come. So we usually don't even bring politics into the discussions in the of the science of water management.
Ashok Swain, thank you so much for joining Researching Peace. Good luck with the politicians.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. That's the important, difficult task, how to get the politicians on. But I think it's a process which needs to start.